Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 66. In this episode, I'll discuss diabetic ketoacidosis and hyperosmolar hyperglycemic state. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode66. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. The Pharmacy Nation Slack group is a free community with other pharmacists from around the world collaborating using real-time messaging. I invite you to join me and the many other Pharmacy Nation members there. You can sign up at pharmacynation.org. Diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA, and hyperosmolar hyperglycemic state, or HHS, are the most serious acute complications of diabetes. These diabetic crises cause thousands of deaths annually in the United States. DKA and HHS differ clinically according to the presence of ketoacidosis and the degree of hyperglycemia. In DKA, metabolic acidosis is often the major finding. The serum glucose is usually below 800 and most frequently in the 350 to 500 milligrams per deciliter range. And DKA usually evolves very rapidly, over a period of a day or less. In HHS, there is little or no ketoacidosis, and the serum glucose concentration frequently is over 1,000 milligrams per deciliter. HHS usually evolves over a period of several days. Now, there can be overlap between DKA and HHS in about a third of the patients. Insulin deficiency resistance and glucagon excess are responsible for the development of DKA and HHS. The deficiency in insulin, either an absolute or relative deficiency, is more severe in DKA compared with HHS. In HHS, the residual insulin secretion and its systemic activity minimizes the development of ketoacidosis, but is not adequate to control hyperglycemia. In patients with absolute or relative insulin deficiency, DKA and HHS are usually precipitated by a stressor, such as infection or discontinuation of or inadequate insulin therapy. The treatment of DKA and HHS involves the correction of fluid and electrolyte abnormalities, followed by the administration of insulin. Now, in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode66, I have several specific treatment protocols, one from the American Diabetes Association in their guidelines, another called the Joslin Protocol, and a third, the Yale New Haven Protocol. And these are adult DKA and HHS protocols. The order of treatment is absolutely essential. A patient in DKA or HHS is already volume depleted. Insulin forces glucose as well as potassium and water into cells, and therefore giving insulin before correcting fluid and electrolyte abnormalities can result in cardiovascular collapse and death. Fluid replacement should begin in most patients with isotonic saline at a rate of 1,000 mL per hour for several hours. If the patient has hypovolemic shock, then IV fluids may need to be infused even faster than this. Unless the serum potassium is above normal, potassium replacement should also be initiated immediately. It's important to get ahead of potassium levels, since fluid replacement and insulin administration will lower the serum potassium. If the initial serum potassium is below 3.3 MEQs per liter, and especially if the patient was hypokalemic prior to therapy, very aggressive replacement of potassium at rates of 20 to 40 MEQs per hour will be necessary. Caution, of course, is necessary if renal function remains depressed or urine output does not increase to levels of 50 mLs per hour or greater. Careful monitoring of the serum potassium is essential for the management of both DKA and HHS. IV regular insulin can be started as long as the serum potassium is above 3.3 MEQs per liter, and aggressive fluid resuscitation has already been started. Insulin lowers the serum glucose concentration and diminishes ketone production. The ADA treatment guidelines for DKA and HHS suggest starting IV regular insulin with a 0.1 unit per kilo IV bolus, followed by an infusion of 0.1 units per kilo per hour. Alternatively, the bolus dose can be omitted and a continuous infusion of 0.14 units per kilo per hour can be used. Serum glucose should decrease by about 50 to 70 milligrams per deciliter per hour with these rates. And if the serum glucose does not fall by at least this much from the first hour, the insulin infusion rate should be doubled hourly until a steady decline in serum glucose is achieved. When the serum glucose reaches 200 milligrams per deciliter in DKA or 250 to 300 in HHS, the IV saline solution is switched to dextrose and saline, and it may be possible to decrease the insulin infusion rate to somewhere between 0.02 to 0.05 units per kilo per hour. And the reason the lowering of glucose is held to this level is that further lowering may promote the development of cerebral edema. Bicarbonate use in these patients is controversial because there's a lack of evidence for benefit, and there are several potential serious side effects, such as reduced cerebral pH, slower recovery of ketosis, and post-treatment metabolic alkalosis. In addition, bicarbonate administration can contribute to further lowering of serum potassium. If the arterial pH is less than 6.9, consider giving 50 MEQs of sodium bicarbonate per hour for 2 hours. Phosphate replacement should be used if severe hypophosphatemia occurs. This would be a serum phosphate concentration below 1, and especially in the setting of cardiac dysfunction, hemolytic anemia, or respiratory depression. The hyperglycemic crisis is considered to be resolved when the following three goals are reached. Number one, the anion gap has closed to less than 12 MEQs per liter. Number two, the patient is mentally alert, that's if they had HHS. And number three, the patient is able to eat. Once these goals are met, the patient can be converted to subcutaneous insulin. Patients with pre-existing insulin regimens may have their home insulin dose resumed. In insulin-naive patients, an insulin regimen totaling 0.5 to 0.8 units per kilo per day, including bolus and basal insulin, should be initiated. Listeners can support the show when they shop using my link to Amazon. It will cost you no extra money, and I will receive a small commission from Amazon. Just use my link, pharmacyjoe.com/shop, to take you to Amazon each time you shop. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.